Chapter 18. "Goodbye and good luck, Mr. Taverner," the Pole chick named Peg said to him at the wide entrance to the great gray academy building. "Thanks," Jason said. He inhaled a deep sum of morning air, smog-infested as it was. "I got out," he said to himself. "They could have hung 1,000 busts on me, but they didn't." A female voice, very throaty, said from close by, "How now, little man?" Never in his life had he been called little man. He stood over 6 feet tall. Turning, he started to say something in answer, then made out the creature who had addressed him. She too stood a full 6 feet in height. They matched in that department. But in contrast to him, she wore tight black pants, a leather shirt, red, with tassel fringes, gold-hooped earrings, and a belt made of chain, and spike-heeled shoes. "Jesus Christ," he thought, appalled. "Where's her whip?" "Were you talking to me?" he said. "Yes." She smiled, showing teeth ornamented with gold signs of the zodiac. "They put 3 items on you before you got out of there. I thought you ought to know." "I know," Jason said, wondering who or what she was. "One of them," the girl said, "is a miniaturized H-bomb. It can be detonated by a radio signal emitted from this building. Did you know about that?" Presently, he said, "No, I didn't." "It's the way he works things," the girl said. "My brother. He raps mellow and nice to you, civilizedly, and then he has one of his staff, he has a huge staff, plant that garbage on you before you can walk out the door of the building." "Your brother," Jason said. "General Buckman." He could see now the resemblance between them. The thin, elongated nose, the high cheekbones, the neck, like a Modigliani, tapered beautifully. Very patrician, he thought. They, both of them, impressed him. "So she must be a 7-2, he said to himself. He felt himself become wary again. The hackles on his neck burned as he confronted her. "I'll get them off you," she said, still smiling, like General Buckman, a gold-toothed smile. "Good enough," Jason said. "Come over to my quibble." She started off lithely. He loped clumsily after her. A moment later, they sat together in the front bucket seats of her quibble. "Alice is my name," she said. He said, "I'm Jason Taverner, the singer and TV personality." "Oh, really? I haven't watched a TV program since I was 9. "You haven't missed much," he said. He did not know if he meant it ironically. Frankly, he thought, "I'm too tired to care." "This little bomb is the size of a seed," Alice said, "and it's embedded like a tick in your skin. Normally, even if you knew it was there someplace on you, you could still never find it. But I borrowed this from the academy." She held up a tube-like light. "This glows when you get it near a seed bomb." She began at once, efficiently and nearly professionally, to move the light across his body. At his left wrist, the light glowed. "I also have the kit they use to remove a seed bomb," Alice said. From her mail pouch purse, she brought a shallow tin, which she at once opened. "The sooner it's cut out of you, the better," she said, as she lifted a cutting tool from the kit. For 2 minutes, she cut expertly, meanwhile spraying an analgesic compound on the wound. And then it lay in her hand, as she had said, the size of a seed. "Thanks," he said, "for removing the thorn from my paw." Alice laughed gaily. She replaced the cutting tool in the kit, shut the lid, returned it to her huge purse. "You see," she said, "he never does it himself. It's always one of his staff. So he can remain ethical and aloof, as if it has nothing to do with him. I think I hate that the most about him. She pondered. I really hate him. Is there anything else you can cut or tear off me? Jason inquired. They tried. Peg, who was a police technician expert at it, tried to stick a voice tap on your gullet. But I don't think she got it to stick. Cautiously, she explored his neck. No, it didn't catch. It fell off. Fine. That takes care of that. You do have a microtrans on you somewhere. We'll need a strobe light to pick up its flux. She fished in the glove compartment of the quibble and came up with a battery-operated strobe disc. I think I can find it, she said, setting the strobe light into activity. The microtrans turned out to be in residence in the cuff of his left sleeve. Alice pushed a pin through it, and that was that. Is there anything else? Jason asked her. Possibly a minicam. A very small camera transmitting a TV image back to Academy monitors. But I didn't see them wind one into you. I think we can take a chance and forget that. She turned then to scrutinize him. Who are you? She asked. By the way. Jason said, an unperson. Meaning what? Meaning that I don't exist. Physically? I don't know, he said, truthfully. Maybe, he thought, if I had been more open with her brother, the police general, maybe he could have worked it out. After all, Felix Buckman was a 7. Whatever that meant. But still, Buckman had probed in the right direction. He had brought out a good deal. And in a very short time. A period punctuated by a late-night breakfast and a cigar. The girl said, So you're Jason Taverner. The man McNulty was trying to pin down and couldn't. The man with no data on him anywhere in the world. No birth certificate. No school records. No... How is it you know all this? Jason said. I looked over McNulty's report. Her tone was blithe. In Felix's office. It interested me. Then why did you ask me who I am? Alice said, I wondered if you knew. I had heard from McNulty. This time I wanted your side of it. The anti-pole side, as they call it. I can't add anything to what McNulty knows, Jason said. That's not true. She had begun to interrogate him now, precisely in the manner her brother had a short time ago. A low, informal tone of voice, as if something merely casual were being discussed. Then the intense focus on his face, the graceful motions of her arms and hands, as if, while talking to him, she danced a little. With herself. Beauty dancing on beauty, he thought. He found her physically, sexually exciting. And he had had enough of sex, God knew, for the next several days. Okay, he conceded. I know more. More than you told Felix? He hesitated, and in doing so, answered. Yes, Alice said. He shrugged. It had become obvious. Tell you what, Alice said briskly. Would you like to see how a police general lives? His home? His billion-dollar castle? You'd let me in there? He said, incredulous. If he found out... He paused. Where is this woman leading me? He asked himself. Into terrible danger. Everything in him sensed it, became at once wary and alert. He felt his own cunning course through him, infusing every part of his somatic being. His body knew that here, more than at any other time, he had to be careful. You have legal access to his home? He said, calming himself. He made his voice natural, devoid of any unusual tension. "Hell," Alice said, "I live with him. We're twins. We're very close. Incestuously close." Jason said, "I don't want to walk into a setup hammered out between you and General Buckman." "A setup between Felix and me?" She laughed sharply. "Felix and I couldn't collaborate in painting Easter eggs. Come on, let's shoot over to the house. Between us, we have a good deal of interesting objects. Medieval wooden chess sets, old bone china cups from England, some beautiful early U.S. stamps printed by the National Banknote Company. Do stamps interest you?" "No," he said. "Guns?" He hesitated. "To some extent." He remembered his own gun. This was the second time in 24 hours that he had reason to remember it. Eyeing him, Alice said, "You know, for a small man, you're not bad-looking. And you're older than I like. But not much so. You're a 6, aren't you?" He nodded. "Well," Alice said, "do you want to see a police general's castle?" Jason said, "Okay." They would find him wherever he went, whenever they wanted him, with or without a microtrans pinned on his cuff. Turning on the engine of her quibble, Alice Buckman spun the wheel, pressed down on the pedal. The quibble shot up at a 90-degree angle to the street. A police engine, he realized, twice the horsepower of domestic models. "There is one thing," Alice said as she steered through traffic, "that I want you to get clear in your mind." She glanced over at him to be sure he was listening. "Don't make any sexual advances toward me. If you do, I'll kill you." She tapped her belt and he saw, tucked within it, a police model weapon tube. It glinted blue and black in the morning sun. "Noticed and attended to," he said, and felt uneasy. He already did not like the leather and iron costume she wore. Fetishistic qualities were profoundly involved, and he had never cared for them. And now this ultimatum. Where was her head sexually? With other lesbians? Was that it? In answer to his unspoken question, Alice said calmly, "All my libido, my sexuality, is tied up with Felix." "Your brother?" He felt cold, frightened incredulity. "How?" "We've lived an incestuous relationship for 5 years," Alice said, adroitly maneuvering her quibble in the heavy morning Los Angeles traffic. "We have a child, 3 years old. He's kept by a housekeeper and nurse down in Key West, Florida. Barney is his name." "And you're telling me this," he said, amazed beyond belief. "Someone you don't even know." "Oh, I know you very well, Jason Taverner," Alice said. She lifted the quibble up into a higher lane, increased velocity. The traffic now had thinned. They were leaving Greater L.A. "I've been a fan of yours, of your Tuesday night TV show for years. And I have records of yours. And once I heard you sing live at the Orchid Room at the Hotel St. Francis in San Francisco." She smiled briefly at him. "Felix and I, we're both collectors. And one of the things I collect is Jason Taverner records." Her darting, frenetic smile increased. "Over the years, I've collected all 9. Jason said huskily, his voice shaking, 10. I've put out 10 LPs. The last few with light show projection tracks." "Then I missed one," Alice said agreeably. "Here, turn around and look in the back seat." Twisting about, he saw in the rear seat his earliest album, Taverner and the Blue, Blue Blues. Yes, he said, seizing it and bringing it forward onto his lap. There's another one there, Alice said. My favorite out of all of them. He saw then a dog-eared copy of There'll Be a Good Time with Taverner Tonight. Yes, he said. That's the best one I ever did. You see, Alice said. The quibble dipped now, spiraling down in a helical pattern toward a cluster of large estates, tree and grass surrounded below. Here's the house.